Chapter 2. Rooster. Djibouti, Djibouti. Nutsby, the Panther Force communications and analytics contact, was on the phone reading out coordinates. He had accessed military satellite imagery to find the temporary camp of the nomadic Afar tribe. They were an impoverished people, suffering from climate change, still clinging to their traditional land, hoping that somehow life would improve. The good news was there weren't many tribespeople at the Lakasal site. The bad news was there was no road, no cover, and no high ground near the camp. There would be no stealth mode. Randy and Rooster would have to go in fully visible. And they'd also have to hope they could find one of the traders who could speak Arabic or French, the two formal languages of Djibouti, in order to communicate. Randy and Rooster loaded 20-gallon plastic jugs of water into their 4x4. Along with cases of peanut paste with vegetable oil, powdered milk, sugar, and vitamins. This plastic-wrapped goo was used to treat acute malnutrition in countries facing famine. Rooster had found the tribesmen, hoping to save their children from starvation, were often happy to trade information or hostages for this portable food supply. In case they found the Bowens, Rooster also packed emergency medical equipment. A helicopter from the naval ship, sitting off the coast of Yemen, was being worked out as their backup if the team got eyes on the captives. But Rooster couldn't wait for the thumbs up from Nutsby. He thought Brilliant had probably recorded and was going over today's communications, just as he and Randy had. Brilliant might catch his mistake. Then he'd move the Bowens, and the rescue effort would be back to square one. Or less. The Afar people who lived along Lakasal survived next to one of the most salinized lakes in the world. They had been herders by tradition, but climate change had hit this region hard. With rainfall down to almost nil and the vegetation dead, the tribe's people turned to the one resource they had, salt. As the lake waters receded from lack of precipitation, they left behind massive salt deposits. Harvested and transported to market, the tribesmen earned about $5 per buoy-sized bag. The problem with Angie's heart was not just the stress she had undergone for over a month now, but how much salt was in her environment. Rooster had been in the salt flats of India, where people's hands and feet became so septic from salt absorption that when the families tried to follow the tradition of cremating their remains, their loved ones' feet and hands wouldn't burn. It was that bad. If Angie Bowen was being held in the Afar harvesting camp, the atmospheric salt could pose a unique and horrible medical problem for her, beyond the issues of water, food, and unbearable heat. Brilliant hadn't made an appointment for a proof of life call. If the Bowens were still alive, they didn't have the luxury of days, maybe not even hours. He and Randy would need to do the thing that every trained operative works hard never to do. Wing it. They staged at the end of the last road heading in the general direction of the salt camp, waiting for the night to deepen. It was a full moon. That didn't help matters. There was a wicked wind their landlady had called Khamsin that aggressively blew hot air in from the desert, lifting and carrying dust and sand with it, reducing visibility. That might give them a bit of protection. Both men were in their battle dress uniforms in a gray digital print that helped them blend into the barren landscape. Shimogs, wrapped around their heads and faces, kept the debris from biting into their necks. It was time. Rooster pushed down the clutch on his SUV and dragged the gear shift into first. They'd move fast until they were within a click's distance, then creep in, hoping the engine noise would be lost behind the howl of the winds. Rooster had the driver's seat pushed back as far as it would go. But at 6'8", it was always like doing origami to fold himself into a vehicle. Randy had his chair pushed all the way forward, making room for the supplies that crowded behind them. He was just shy of 6 feet, but was built like an anaconda, long, lean, and lethal. Randy sat with his knees nearly to his ears and grunted when their vehicle bounced over the rough terrain. He gripped the computer in his hands, watching the feed coming from Nutsby in the Panther Force war room back in the States. Nutsby's voice periodically gave them information over the magnetic comms they dropped into their ear canals.